Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
And welcome to the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. On tonight's episode, we're going to take two with Pappas. That's right. We're going to be checking out Point Break from all the way back in 1991 where, whoa, yes, that's right, Kevin and, of course, Kyle love this film. And they are, of course, the founders of the channel we're on, FPN. Here, of course, is your action cinema podcast on that very channel, the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. And in tonight's episode, as we mentioned, we're really going to look at what Keanu Reeves, you know, got into when it came to these action sort of franchises, what James Cameron had to do with it. Of course, he was the husband to Catherine Bigelow back in the day and, of course, had some what to do with this fantastic film. And also we're going to look at just what makes this, you know, a movie people like to re-watch. And I mean, they even tried to reboot it horribly. That was a terrible film, that 2015 one. Had the right actors and the right ideas, but just terribly executed. I don't like it whatsoever. But this one is one that fires on all cylinders. It's fantastic. And that's what we're going to be chatting about tonight here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about Deep Thought. And Deep Thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina, in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor to tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name is Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Fandom Podcast Network's master channel at fpnet.podbean.com or subscribe on the Podbean app where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. And also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, the Lethal Mullet, at the Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
And here we are with the news segment. Not a lot to talk about, folks, other than obviously there's some great streaming out there right now. And I'll tell you what I have been doing is going through some of the streaming that's on offer on the Disney Plus platform. I don't always have the platform on, but what I do is I definitely check out the latest Star Wars and stuff. I do want to keep my ear and, of course, eyes on what Star Wars is you know, happening under, of course, Disney Plus and, of course, Disney. But, you know, at the same time, you still got Dave Filoni and John Favreau over there doing a fantastic job. But also some not so good too. So I like keeping an eye out on their ideas because, I mean, from my neck of the woods when it comes to the old expanded universe, they love that. And there's always little bits and pieces of that in there. Also been checking out, of course, Babylon 5. If you've watched the last episode, number 235, we looked at, of course, 234, I should say. This is 235. But, of course, 234, we looked at the first season of Babylon 5, and I'm currently going through Babylon 5 season 2. This would be about the fourth time I've rewatched it, and like, you know, many great tapestries of stories like Frank Herbert's Dune or The Lord of the Rings or even Lonesome Dove, you know, the great Larry McMurtry saga. These are ones that I like rereading because the wealth of material and the layers that are involved in these amazing, you know, again, tapestries. It's what they are. They're weaving stories, plans within plans, characters trying to outplot each other and, you know, find ways to get to that MacGuffin. But what I love about Babylon 5 is the wealth of material that's there, particularly the first four seasons. I think they sort of ran out of gas by season five. Yeah, it really is something that's, you know, the Lord of the Rings in space for TV in some ways, you know, amongst many others. I mean, it's got, you know, Doc E. Smith's old series of novels. Obviously, the Lensman series are a big part of what makes this fantastic as well. You know, they're all influences in what became, of course, this great thing that's sort of really centered around Babylon 5 Station. So stay tuned. We will get to, of course, season two soon, and I'm going to keep those going. Next up, we've also got Highlander coming back with season three, and if I can get them, I'm going to try and get the guests on that I've always planned, which is, of course, Kevin and, of course, Sensei Andy Sloan. The two of them are fantastic. If not, well, you know what? We'll get them back for season four if we don't get them in time for that as well. Great shows. And in particular, Highlander surprised me. I only ever really watched the first two seasons back on its original run because, you know, Channel 9 or 10, whoever it was playing at the time, decided to just chuck it up to like midnight because it wasn't getting the numbers. But they did pay for the series, folks. They paid for the series. So much, much more on coming, of course, for you, the listener. The person that loves anything when it comes to 80s, 90s, and 2000s beyond action cinema.
Utah, this better be good.
Whoa, Pappas, you have no idea, man. Like, I did a stakeout, dude, and these guys were going racing in the house, man. And I'm pretty sure they had automatic weapons, man.
Now, Johnny, did you see any wax? Some surfing stuff? Some surfboards? Something like that. Hey, wait, waiter. No. Two. Give me two meatball sandwiches. It's such good sandwiches.
Oh, Pappas, you stuffing your face with meatball sandwiches, man. When we should be staking them out and going after the crooked bad guys, man.
Yes, Utah, give me two.
Sit here waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that you know me, I'm the leader moment. Wow, I'm the leader. Wow, I'm the leader. Oh, I'm the leader. Monday.
All right, Point Break. What a film. Massive film for, of course, 1991 and huge for the careers of both Keanu Reeves and, of course, Patrick Swayze and many of the others in the film. And, of course, for the amazing director Kathryn Bigelow, who's gone on to, of course, some amazing work since. Point Break came out in 1991 and it is basically a crime action movie, you know, a crime action thriller, if you like. And, of course, it centers around surfing. And, of course, the ex-presidents, which are a bunch of crooks or surfers, based as, you know, crooks as their main occupation, how they get their money, and, of course, how they go and do these huge, you know, adrenaline pumping, led by the enigmatic surfing Yoda, that is, of course, Bodhi, this amazing Jedi-like, you know, character, who is really, you know, a master of life and really about seeking the ultimate rush, as we see in this, and the Bodhisattva, if you like, of surfing, played by, of course, Patrick Swayze, which we'll get into soon. He really did become part of who he is. And, of course, we've seen him in other great movies like Dirty Dancing and my personal favorite, Roadhouse. You know, he really has an amazing presence back at this time. You know, the late, great Patrick Swayze, of course. You know, let's not forget Keanu Reeves, which at the time was, you know, really only known for Ted Theodore Logan, man, playing, of course, the FBI agent hot on the trail, of course, of these ex-president surfers. And, of course, Keanu at the time playing Johnny Utah, interesting character. Again, it's typical Keanu at the time. You go, whoa, I'm just like putting in the best performance I've ever put in a movie, man. Like, I'm so like serious actor, man. You know, I hate to say it, that's, you know, what he was. And he still kind of carried that through to The Matrix. You know, it's him putting on a serious performance. But in later years, I've really seen him change into this performer who, you know, like he does actually put in a performance now. And he's actually a half-decent director with, of course, a man, the Man of Tai Chi, if you like, which came out in about 2014. Great one with, of course, Tiger Chen, who taught him, of course, movie Kung Fu for the Matrix films. And I do believe they still worked on the latest Matrix movie as well. Fantastic work. And then, you know, huge respects to somebody that loves that sort of stuff. You know, John Wick as well. He's done a fantastic job with those, which is, I think, a touch above the work that he did on The Matrix. So we're going to get right into this film and what makes it so special. Coming out in 1991, this is a film which really is, you know, a hot topic for the 90s when it comes to music, when it comes to, of course, the actors involved in it. And, of course, Catherine Bigelow on the rise from doing, you know, the previous films, particularly Near Dark as well, which is a fantastic reunion of the Alien cast of characters, obviously. Bill Paxton and many others in that one too. So it's got, of course, Patrick Swayze, Keanu Reeves, the amazing Laurie Petty, and, of course, the enigmatic Gary Busey. And, of course, Point Break is something that refers to, obviously, the surfing crew. Of course, Point Break, where the waves come down at a point of landing and, of course, smashing on the coast. Obviously, it's about the tracking down of a notorious bunch of surfing crooks, the ex-presidents, who use the money to obviously lay out the huge adrenaline-pumping and, you know, adventure-seeking behavior that they have outside of that, whether it's jumping out of planes, whether it's high-speed pursuits, or whether it's just straight-up surfing. And, of course, they're looking at the ultimate one, which is, of course, Bell's Beach, Australia. They were going to go to. This was something that was developed as far back as 1986, where the writer would basically put an initial treatment out. And from here, Catherine Bigelow soon developed the actual story itself, along with her husband at the time, which was James Cameron. Yes, the director of Aliens, folks. That's right. And from there, it wasn't until 4 years later that the actual film took place. And it was shot all over the place in everywhere from, of course, one side of the United States to the other, along across the western coast and, of course, inside the United States itself. The budget's around $24 million at the time, which is pretty hefty for an early 90s film. And, of course, you know, it's something that I think is a bit of a cult film when it comes down to it. It had a very positive reaction from both audience and, of course, critics. And I think the big thing is that there's a real mentor and apprentice relationship between Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves in this. And they're kind of like Jedi Master and Apprentice of the Ocean, if you like, in this one. And that's what I love about it. And I think it's something that no matter what was happening in terms of their lives, you know, one's on one side of the law, one's on the other, they both had a deep you know, a deep respect for each other. And I think that's a huge part of what makes this film, you know, rewatchable. We all like rewatching this movie. Directed by, of course, Catherine Bigelow, who obviously has gone on to some amazing work since. Screenplay was by W. Peter Iliff. Story was, of course, by Iliff and Rick King. Produced by, of course, Peter Abrams and Robert Levy. Now, the story also had rewrites by both Catherine Bigelow and James Cameron. And James Cameron decided to make it, I think behind the scenes to help Catherine get a script that was a little bit more manageable and flowed a hell of a lot better than it was. Donald Peterman did the cinematography on this, and it was edited by Howard Smith. The amazing Mark Isham did the music on this, and we'll more about that later. We'll talk about the soundtrack, which is, if you haven't had a chance, you can find it on Spotify. It's fantastic. Distributed by, of course, 20th Century Fox at a time when Fox was huge. And, of course, here's the one that will get you. It was a production company. It was Largo Entertainment and Johnny Utah Productions. There you go. With a runtime of around about 122 minutes, this is a film which came out with a box office of $103.5 million. Now, when they talked about remakes and stuff, I'm surprised they never did, you know, sequels. I mean, if this was going to be a film that was going to be a franchise, in terms of, you know, films like, say, Fast and the Furious, which is similar ideas, particularly with Toretto and, of course, the other characters, very similar to what was done in this. I mean, it's pretty much a lift into a car genre, if you like. But, even though you have somebody like Patrick's character, and I'm hoping you've watched this, by the way, you that are listening today, because I'm going to say some spoilers here, because the film has been out since 1991. But when his character is gone, the whole idea is that Keanu has sort of become his master's character. He doesn't really fit on either side of the law. He is something else indeed. And I think that's pretty interesting regardless. So what's this movie about? Well, it's about an FBI agent that's just done his final course by the name of Johnny Utah, played by Keanu Reeves, man. Like, chill out, dude. I'm taking this acting very seriously, man. And, of course, he is put on the case of the ex-president's and sent to look out with a Vietnam veteran and experienced agent, Angelo Pappas, played by Gary Busey, that steals every bloody scene he's in. Why? Because he's Gary Busey and he's fucking awesome. Yes, 5 stars for this movie just for Pappas, because, Catherine knew that Gary would bring the goods and he's fucking awesome. There you go. Now, of course, they're hot on the tail of a bunch of crooks called the ex-presidents, gang of robbers who wear Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, Richard Nixon, and Lyndon B. Johnson masks. Yeah, no Aussie prime ministers in there, folks. Yeah, nah. And, of course, rather than going for, the straight normal thing that people go for in a bank, going for the big goods in the vault, instead they just go to the tellers and they get greedy. They go in, grab it, and get out in under 90 seconds. So Pappas has a theory, and this is something that a lot of them, the other officers in the FBI go, oh, Pappas is like crazy, man. Well, here's where it gets interesting. Pappas thinks that they're all surfers. He's found sand and wax that surfers use in as evidence in the robberies. So it makes it interesting that there could be something there. So they decide to get Utah to go undercover into the surfing circuit, into the community, to get what he can and find out what's going on. From here, he meets Tyler, a young lady that runs a surf shop, and she goes down to teach him to surf. Now, at first she's reluctant to do so because, who is this guy? He seems a bit crazy, a bit nuts. But when she saves him down in the ocean where he's practically drowning, she goes off, and from here he gets to become friends with her and, of course, eventually loves her. From here he meets Bodie, who played by, of course, Patrick Swayze, who's the leader of the gang of surfers, and those surfers are Roach, Gromit, and Nathaniel. The group are quite wary of Utah. They look at Utah and they think, man, who is this guy? But when one of them sees that he's actually a pretty famous college football player who quit thanks to a knee injury he took in, they said, hey, this guy's all right. And as he gets to know them further, he starts to master surfing, and Utah finds that he's really brought into a world that he likes. This is a world that he wants to stay in. It's a beautiful way to really find yourself. And from here, this is where things get strained, particularly with him and Pappas, because Pappas can see what's happening. Pappas is like, hey, man, what are you doing? And, so we get to see quite a bit of, if it, detective work happening while they're also doing busts on the side. So while they're looking, obviously after Bodie's group, Utah also finds another crew that he thinks are the ex-presidents. Goes after them, gets the shit kicked out of him in one of the scenes, and then from there they go and stake out the house that these guys are in. One of them just happens to be the lead singer of course, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Anthony Kiedis. Yes, no fan of Mike Patton, this guy. He does not like Faith No More, folks, and doesn't like Keanu Reeves much either. So we get to see him. That. Now, there's also, for those that are Jean-Claude Van Damme fans and fans, of course, of Cyborg and many other sort of style movies, then of course you'll see that this movie has Nemesis' own Vincent Klein in this as well. Of course, he's a bad guy in, of course, Jean-Claude Van Damme's Cyborg as well, and many other films. In this one, he gets to have a fight over a lawnmower with the one and only Keanu Reeves. Then they find out they're not the guys. That's when they finally realize that, of course, Bodhi, or Bodhisattva, is actually the bad guys. And from here, this is where things get interesting. When Tyler gets kidnapped by, of course, Bodhi, and Utah's forced to take place into an actual robbery himself without the mask, so he gets caught. But also from there, he chases them through everything from surfing through to, of course, skydiving and beyond to land in Mexico somewhere. From here, after he can't track anyone down, 9 months later, he finds Utah in, goes to Bodhi, where he finds him in Bell's Beach in Victoria, Australia, one of the most notorious, biggest swells ever. It's going to take a 50-year storm, they call it. From here, Utah tries to bring in Bodhi. They have a fight through the surf, but then he realizes he needs to take that trip on the surfboard out into the surf and, of course, experience the 50-year storm, knowing that Bodhi will not come back alive. He'll drown out there. From here, he throws away his badge and, of course, walks away. So this is when you see that this is, a movie about him becoming that sort of character. So it's a story that's been copied, I don't know how many times, by many other films. And even there's some older movies which, you know, maybe even influenced this as well. Let's have a look at the cast. Patrick Swayze as Bodhi. Keanu Reeves as Johnny Utah. Gary Busey as Agent Angelo Pappas. Easily the best in the movie, folks. You know, he takes two. Give him, of course, the meatball sandwiches. You can get them at Subway's, folks. Just take two. Laurie Petty as Tyler. She's quite good at this. And again, you know, I didn't really know too much of her at the time, apart from doing this. Probably Tank Girls, the other one. And of course, John C. McGinley as Ben Harp. He's quite good at this, doing what McGinley does best, just gets into it. James LaGrosse as Roach. Yeah, he's, of course, the kind of like the henchman, if you like, for Bodhi. But he's also likable and funny as well in this too. John Feldman as Nathaniel, somebody who's definitely got some experience as a surfer. Lee Tergesen as Rosie. You know, Lee, you'll remember from a massive amount of movies. Shaft, he's known for, of course. Known for Wayne's World. I love you, man. You know, that guy. Vincent Klein as Lupton Warchild. Going after Warchild. Vincent Klein, who got the butt kicked out of him by, of course, Van Damme. Chris Pederson as Bunker. That's right. Weiss. Dave Olsen as Archbold. Anthony Kiedis as Tone. Galen Gorg as Margarita. And Sydney Walsh as Miss Deer. Anthony Mangano plays the off-duty cop at the bank, the one that pulls out the gun. We also see Mike Genovese as the instructor Corey at the start. Jennick Keeler as the FBI technician. You got Tom Sizemore in this, folks, as well as DEA agent, Agent Deeds. Do you think I like this hair, man? Do you think I like this gear? 5 months, man. You know, that guy. And, of course, we all know Tom. We all know what he's been through and what he's done and movies and stuff like that. He was great. Okay, we'll go through some of the behind-the-scenes details. The film almost came out in 1986, and originally the cast of Johnny Utah, some of the people who are up for it were Matthew Broderick, Johnny Depp, Val Kilmer, and Charlie Sheen. Now, Charlie Sheen, I could definitely have seen doing this at that time. It wasn't until, of course, after Ridley Scott was going to be directing at the time. Interesting, isn't it? and that James Cameron was working on the script too, the Aliens people guys. 4 years later, of course, this is when they finally got the script, Point Break, and they looking for a director afterwards. It was executive producer, of course, James Cameron, who was, you know, really looking for it at the time after his wife at the time, Catherine Bigelow, had done Blue Steel, and they were looking for another project along those lines. And it was Cameron's actual idea to bring in, of course, the idea of making these crooks the ex-presidents and give that sort of iconic look to the film, which is interesting. And, of course, it was originally just going to be called Johnny Utah. Interesting, eh? This is before Reeves got involved in it too. The film had also been called Riders on the Storm at one stage, of course, based on the Doors song. Riders on the Storm. Yeah, not one of my favourite songs, but okay, apparently that really did it. Of course, Reeves liked the idea and, of course, liked the idea of playing a character called Johnny Utah. It sounds like something like a, as they said, you know, classic athlete or star athlete, like Johnny Unitas. And, of course, you know, he described what he was doing and it is the character as a control freak, and the ocean is what humbles him, you know, beats him up and challenges him for life. And after all, it becomes a game, becomes an immoral as any criminal. He loses the difference between right and wrong. And, of course, we see that at the end. He's sort of a bit of both. So Laurie Petty, Reeves and Swayze also got involved in surfing thanks to Dennis Jarvis out in the Kaui Islands of Hawaii. This is where they learnt from him how to surf. And, of course, Keanu took to it. Patrick had already surfed before and Laurie had never either. Been in the ocean before. Of course, Keanu kept it up. He was surfing afterwards and took it up as a pursuit. But Swayze got right into it. He did 55 parachute jumps for the film as well and made sure that he was, quote, basically everybody that was doing stunts, he was able to do the same. And, of course, he did. The film was shot in different parts all over the country, Lake Powell in Utah, Wheeler and Ecola State Park in Oregon and Malibu, Manhattan Beach, Santa Monica, Venice, and, of course, the Fox Hills Mall in California. And now, a lot of people talk about the Bell's Beach scenes, and, of course, you know, we have some pretty famous people in that too from Australia. But Bell's Beach scenes were not shot there at all. It was shot in Indian Beach and Ecola State Park, which is at Cannon Beach in Oregon. So, yeah, nowhere near Australia, folks. Okay. You had an Aussie in the scene. It's as close as you're going to get. Okay, let's get to the soundtrack. Now, I knew of the soundtrack pretty well. Obviously, a lot of it's old 80s stuff and 90s and beyond. But what I love about the soundtrack itself, now listening back to it so many years later on the stream platform, of course, of Spotify, which hopefully you're listening to us on right now as well, has some great stuff. Now, of course, the big one, Nobody Rides for Free, Rat. What a great track. And this one I've sort of had pumping while I've been doing my martial arts workouts recently. I Want You by Concrete Blonde. Jimmy Buffett's Volcano. Great track, folks. The Jimi Hendrix, If Six Was Nine. School of Fish by the Rose Colored Glasses. Public Image Limited, Criminal. And, of course, Shark Island, My City. Love 7 and 7 is a fantastic song. We've got Westworld's So Long Cowboy. LA Guns. I know that's a big fave, of course, of the one and only Kevin the Reader Nerd Reitzel with Over the Edge. We've also got Ice-T with OG Original Gangster. Mark Isham, Foot Chase. Sheryl Crow with Hundreds of Tears. And, of course, Wire Train, I Will Not Fall. There's also Liquid Jesus, 7 and 7 is. And, of course, Little Caesar with Down to the Wire. Now, there was also a score album which came out, and it came out in 2008 and was released by La La Records. And, of course, it has all of the composer's work by, of course, Mark Isham, which, you know, you'll know some of that stuff from the start of the film, of course, with the FBI training, etc., like that too. Point Break was released in 1991, and, of course, it opened the weekend behind Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Husband and wife both getting their stuff out at the same time. Gotta love it. And, you know, it was huge. What was the response like? Well, Rotten Tomatoes. Well, we love that website, don't we, folks?
No.
What?
No.
Apparently not. Holds an approval rating, they said, based on their huge collection of reviews that they collect, rating of 70% based on 73 and an average of 6.1 out of 10. All right, thanks, mate. Roger Ebert at the time thought Bigelow is an interesting director for this material. She's interested in the ways of characters live dangerously for philosophical reasons. They're not men of action, but men of thought who choose action as a way of expressing their beliefs. Interesting. Now, obviously, too, we've got many others giving the same. And I think, you know, again, this is what makes the movie interesting, is that it's not a perfect film, but it is a film which, through the characters, particularly Johnny and, of course, Bodie and even Pappas, we want to come back and revisit because the characters are interesting. That's what they did here. They did an interesting movie about characters. So this is definitely a cult favorite. A lot of people have brought that up. You know, number of magazines. The Daily Telegraph said that it was certainly qualified as a cult favorite. And it is. It's and even they said it's a wet Western, which kind of, you know, the Rolling Stone said, which, you know, and films like The Fast and Furious were definitely a reimagined version of those. But I think the big thing is, too, it's almost a video, music video style film, if you like, too. It really is. And it's been mentioned a number of times since. You know, there's sometimes even in more recent material where Point Break's brought back. Like we've got in Avengers, Robert Downey Jr.'s character Tony Stark dismissively calls Thor. He says, "Hey, Point Break," because the hair is similar to, of course, Swayze's at the time. And, of course, they did a remake in 2015. As I said, it's just not really worth looking at. And of course, you know, some of the original cast were in that movie. James LeGros and Bo Jesse, Christopher were in that as well. Who played ex-presidents in the original film. All right, let's cut to the chase, folks. Where does this sit in this? Well, alone, just thanks to Boosie's performance and the characters and coming back to it, this movie gets a 5 out of 5 on the Hallenbach scale.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.